WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Playwright David Henry Hwang won the 1988 Tony Award for his play M. Butterfly, the story of a French diplomat who falls in love with a Chinese opera star who's a spy posing as a woman. In his earlier plays, Hwang directly addressed the Asian-American experience. His recent plays are less autobiographical, but they raise questions about ethnic stereotypes and alienation from the mainstream. Hwang's latest work, A Thousand Airplanes on the Roof, is a music theater collaboration with composer Philip Glass and designer Jerome Serlin. It features one character who believes she's been abducted by aliens and taken into the fifth dimension. But when she returns home, she's afraid to tell anyone because she knows they'll think she's crazy.
To think that there are others who live closer to the center of the universe, possessing a sophistication befitting that position. To think we're only poor backward cousins who... No. Galileo died years ago. But humans, in our arrogance, still think the universe revolves around us. It is better to forget. It is pointless to remember. No one will believe you. You will have spoken a heresy. You will be outcast.
I think that there's a lot of interest right now in the line between science fiction and science fact. And so it seemed extremely timely and interesting to explore. And the more we read the actual literature about people who have believed they've gone through these experiences, the more we were kind of moved by their situation.
What were some of the common themes that you found that you wanted to use in your text in reading the literature about people who had sighted UFOs?
What I found most moving about the whole experience was that it seemed to me that these people were put in an insoluble dilemma, that to the extent that they admitted that this thing had happened to them, they were by definition crazy. But to the extent they pretended that it didn't, it created a disjunction in themselves about denying something they believed to be true and consequently made them crazy. And so that dilemma is at the psychological crux of the text that I composed.
What about that dilemma spoke to you personally? Had you experienced a similar dilemma yourself?
I think that all of us are, you know, while not that many of us may actually believe we've been taken up by UFOs, I think we've all had the experience at some point of having a feeling something that we can't communicate to other people and therefore believing that we may be crazy. In retrospect, if I go into it, it may have something to do with this whole feeling of alienation relating to some of my earlier work about, you know, Chinese Americans and feeling an outsider in this society and trying to adjust to the society. It seems to me that there is some sort of psychological parallel there.
Your play, M. Butterfly, won the 1988 Tony Award for Best Play. It was about a French diplomat whose fantasy is fulfilled while he's stationed in China. He has a mistress who is his idea of the perfect woman. She is submissive, vulnerable, and beautiful. But this woman turns out to really be a man who's actually a spy and is betraying this French diplomat. This was based on a true story. When you read the newspaper article about this case of an American diplomat who was betrayed by a man posing as a woman, what made you realize that you could get the kind of resonance out of it that you did on themes like racism, sexism?
When I first read the article, the actual diplomat, whose name is Bernard Borisko, it was a very short article, it was just two paragraphs, but he was trying to account for the fact that he had never seen his lover naked. And he said, well, I thought she was very modest. I thought it must have been a Chinese custom. And I knew immediately that it's not a Chinese custom, that Asian women are not any more shy with their lovers than are women of the West. But I did also realize that it conforms to a certain Western stereotype of what the submissive Oriental woman would be. I therefore concluded that this French diplomat had fallen in love with not an actual person, but a fantasy of the Orient. And I also inferred from that that the spy, to the extent he allowed the diplomat to persist in this misperception, was manipulating that whole stereotype. And so that kind of gave me the psychological crux to begin thinking about the play and how it could have been possible.
I would really love it if you would just read a little bit of the text that you wrote for M. Butterfly. And I think this will give us some idea of how you use this story to get at issues of sexism and racism.
Okay. Well, I'm going to read just a little section from the scene where the Frenchman Gallimard and the Chinese spy Sung first meet. And he meets her at the German ambassador's house and has just seen her perform the death scene from Madame Butterfly. Gallimard says, "I usually don't like Butterfly." Sung, "I can't blame you in the least." Gallimard, "I mean the story." Sung, "Ridiculous." Gallimard, "I like the story, but..." "What?" Sung says, "It's one of your favorite fantasies, isn't it? The submissive Oriental woman and the cruel white man?" Gallimard, "Well, I didn't quite mean..." Sung, "Consider it this way. What would you say if a blonde homecoming queen fell in love with a short Japanese businessman? He treats her cruelly, then goes home for 3 years, during which time she prays to his picture and turns down marriage from a young Kennedy. Then, when she learns he has remarried, she kills herself. Now, I believe you would consider this girl to be a deranged idiot, correct? But because it's an Oriental who kills herself for a Westerner, ah, you find it beautiful." Gallimard, "Yes, well, I see your point." Sung, "I will never do Butterfly again, Monsieur Gallimard. If you wish to see some real theater, come to the Peking Opera sometime. Expand your mind."
Well, you know, later on, Sung points out in your play that in the Peking Opera, women's roles are performed by men because only a man knows how a woman is supposed to act.
Right. And later on in the play, actually, Gallimard says, "I'm a man who loved a woman created by a man." So I think the notion is this, that this whole idea of the perfect woman is false, even to the point of the woman actually being a man.
And that the perfect woman is just purely a projection of male
right.
fantasy. This is something women have to contend with all the time, and mm-hmm. I think women think about these kinds of issues a lot. You're a man thinking about these issues, and I was wondering what sensitized you to this idea of the perfect woman being a male fantasy.
Well, I think that, you know, as a man, I'm conscious of the degree to which those sort of sexist elements play in my own psyche. I mean, that when I'm attracted to a woman or something, there are good reasons to be attracted and bad reasons to be attracted. And I think that as a man, I'm conscious of that many times my reasons are not so good. But I think also as an Asian and being aware of a certain amount of discrimination or condescension or patronization or something from society at large, gives me a certain means of identifying with the way perhaps women are patronized in this society.
Your parents are both Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Your father was from China. Your mother, I think, grew up in the Philippines.
Right.
You grew up in the States.
Right.
Was assimilation an issue in your family?
I think that assimilation was assumed in my family because we're a bit odd in that the normal pattern among immigrants is that the immigrant generation sticks very close to the old country and then the next generation has to rebel. In my family, the immigrant generation assimilated extremely quickly. And consequently, my sort of retrograde interest in the things of Asia is something that normally in your standard sociological pattern would happen to my children. So that we were just assumed that we were assimilated from the moment I was born, I think.
I think, though, in the United States, frequently, no matter how assimilated you may feel, if you look like an Asian, you are assumed to be Asian, and mm-hmm. you are not, in other people's eyes,
right.
American.
Well, see, that's the disjunction. At some point, if you believe that you're assimilated, then on some level, if your belief is not that complex, what you're essentially believing is that you're white. And at some point, you realize that you're not, and therefore this creates this disjunction. And that's kind of the, I think, identity crisis that a lot of people of color face.
What has been the most shocking thing for you seeing one of your plays actually performed? Seeing it realized by a really good actor or actress?
I think that when I see something performed of mine performed really well, the thing that surprises me is that I don't hear the gears turning in my own head. You know, when it's not performed so well, I'm very aware of, you know, I'm doing this as a writer, I'm doing that as a writer. But when I can sort of be absorbed into it and watch it as an audience member, almost as if I hadn't written it, and it seems to me almost fresh, that's the most sort of amazing and really joyful thing.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
David Wong's new music theater piece, 1,000 Airplanes on the Roof, was given its American premiere September 22nd at the American Music Theater Festival in Philadelphia. It runs through October 2nd before touring to 38 cities. This is Fresh Air.